Welcome back to Accelerando. My name is Paula Tuttle, and today I'm with Nanette Solomon, and we're talking about women composers. Dr. Nanette Kaplan Solomon is a concert pianist, and she's an authority on women composers. She's given lecture recitals on women composers all over the world, in Canada, Germany, Austria, Japan, Ireland, Costa Rica, Spain, Thailand, Croatia, Korea, Argentina, Sweden, and Finland. And at home in the United States, in San Diego, Savannah, Denver, Kansas City, Miami, San Antonio, Atlanta, Portland, Oregon, Minneapolis, Boulder, Murray, Kentucky, and Richmond. She's been the online editor for the College Music Society, and she performs regularly in her hometown of Pittsburgh. Welcome to the show, Nanette.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
So, we want to talk to Nanette because she's been a champion of women composers for a really long time, and it seems like the world is just coming around to looking at women composers. What made you decide to feature the women in your concerts?
It started about 1990 or so. I was always looking for unusual repertoire because I'd done all the standard works, and I was kind of looking for my own niche. And at the same time, IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania, was having festivals of women composers. And then also Slippery Rock had a transformation program in 1991. They had a summer program which was transforming the curriculum to be more diverse, multicultural, way back then. I focused on incorporating women into my music history classes, eventually doing an entire course on women in music, and I also decided to just start programming music by women.
Were there any sources, books, or authors that inspired you?
There was a wonderful book by one of the composers that I have recorded and performed. Her name is Judith Lang Zamont. She wrote three volumes of something called The Musical Woman, and she had different essays and articles, but she also did a book called Concert Music by Women Composers.
Were you looking for a historical timeline, or were you interested in a certain period? Were you interested in, say, European women in the 18th and 19th century that were unnoticed, or perhaps American 20th century women that were beginning to have successful careers?
So I was looking mostly for living composers, and I was looking mostly for American women.
At this point, did you reach out to any organizations or some of these composers?
I contacted the American Music Center, which had just huge numbers of scores, and they sent me scores on loan, and I just kind of went from there and then started contacting composers, and they would send me scores.
And I know this led to recording as well. Tell us about your first two CDs.
One was called Sunbursts, and it was seven works by American women, and the other was called Character Sketches. And then I also very recently discovered a woman who lived from 1885 to 1981, and her name was Mona Zucca. Her name was originally Gussie Zuckerman. She took her last name and her first name, and she switched them around to make it Mona Zucca so that you wouldn't know what the gender of the composer was. She wrote thousands of pieces of music, and I recorded a bunch of those.
So Mona Zucca, she knew that if she was labeled as a female composer, people might overlook her music.
Oh, absolutely. Also, she was a polymath. She was also a musical comedy star, and she didn't think that Gussie Zuckerman sounded too good for somebody who was in the theater. So
that was her name, Gussie Zuckerman.
Gussie Zuckerman.
Gussie Zuckerman. Okay. The opener on this podcast was a bit of her Prelude Opus 73, and here's a bit of her Valse Brillante. These are both on Nanette's CD called Badinage, the Music of Mona Zucca.
Thank you.
So we were going to talk about some females that people may have heard of, and I think that you're an expert on all women composers at this point, but let's talk about Mozart's sister. She was gifted. She did some composing, didn't she?
Apparently she did, but nothing survived. When Wolfgang was going on concert tours as a little boy, she was with him. And there were some accounts that she was actually the greater talent, at least as far as performing was concerned. She helped him when he couldn't actually write. When he was that young, she would write out the scores for him. I believe she did compose, but it didn't get published, so it didn't survive. And then, of course, when she got married, you know, you weren't to perform anymore in public because that was a thing.
Yeah, it's kind of a tragedy, isn't it, that we lost a musician of that amplitude, somebody that was that talented, just because she's a woman. And I think that that's why we wanted to focus on some women that people know, but also some of these people that you have worked with. Some of these are personal friends.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I've met Judy Bruce. She's a close friend of yours, and she's written some pieces for you, and that must be really nice. Who are some of these other people who you've made really close personal contact with?
So I mentioned Judith Lang Zeymont. I performed a piece of hers on my first CD, and then she hired me and another flutist to record her piece called Bubble Up Red. And then I was part of a co-commission, a consortium with a bunch of other pianists from other universities to commission a concerto for piano and wind ensemble. Another Pittsburgh composer, Nancy Galbraith, of course. I have performed some of her pieces, and again, I commissioned her to write a piece for piano and wind ensemble that we premiered at Slippery Rock.
That's wonderful. I know you have a really special relationship with David Stock, the late David Stock. Don't you live in his house?
I do. Well, I live downstairs from the apartment that he lived in. And plus, Judy Bruce, my really good friend and composer, was studying with him. And she was setting some of my husband's poems to music. David said, just give those to me, but don't tell Nanette and Jonathan. And so suddenly in the mail, like 6 months before he died, David said, we got this manuscript. And it was 5 songs of Solomon. And it was 5 of Jonathan's poems that he decided to set to music. And, of course, my husband was so honored.
So it was David that wrote them.
Judy had written...
Was part of the project.
She had written some of her own songs on Jonathan's poems. And she gave the poems to David, and he sent them to us.
Such an honor. And it's such an honor to talk to you because, you know, we've known each other for years, and I've known about your connection with women. But this list you have, how many women do you have listed? I asked Nanette to make a list so that we would have an idea, our listeners would have an idea of the number of women composers that you've worked with or you've worked with
for
music.
Yeah. My list right now is about 45.
And how many of them do you think you've met?
Oh, let's see. 16.
So would you
17,
say,
yeah.
You'd say about half of them?
Maybe.
Maybe half of
them. Maybe half, because some of them are dead, so I didn't meet them.
Right. Okay. True. You're considered an expert on women composers, especially American women composers.
That's been my specialty. I perform music by Cécile Chaminade, who is a wonderful French composer. Obviously, I perform music by Manazuka. I perform music by Amy Beach and music by Clara Schumann, Fanny Mendelssohn, as well as Louise Ferenc, Germaine Taillefer.
Let's talk about Fanny Mendelssohn, because she was a pretty good composer and sister of Felix.
Mm-hmm.
Felix's sister. Was she older or younger?
She was 5 years older.
Okay. It's always the older sister, huh? What kind of career did Fanny Mendelssohn have?
Fanny Mendelssohn started off studying with the same teachers that her brother did. And obviously, she'd been playing longer. For her 13th birthday, she learned all of the Bach preludes and fugues from the Well-Tempered Clavier from memory as a gift to her father.
Nice gift.
And she and Felix would, they would do like, you know, like you would play dolls, you know, with your siblings or, you know, catch basketball, they would give each other fugues to finish for each other. So that was their, you know, that was their house, that was their household activity.
So they didn't just finish each other's sentences,
they finished each other's fugues. Right. So they would, you know, they would write music back and forth to each other. But when she would turn 17, basically her father said, music is all well and nice and good for you to have as a hobby, but you know, your proper role is as a housewife and mother.
And that's basically what they said to Mozart's sister, too.
Right, right. But she continued to compose. Even when she got married, she married a court painter whose name was Hensel. His last name was Hensel, William Hensel, I believe. He insisted she be at the piano and she composed. So she wrote a lot of music while she was married. And she also had salons, like little soirees every Sunday. She had all of the major figures of Berlin and anybody who was coming through Berlin. So she had Parisian artists, you know, people from Leipzig, people from all over. She could not perform in public, not so much as she was a woman, but because of her upper class status. It was inappropriate for her as a wealthy, upper-middle-class woman getting paid and performing in a public concert. So it was okay if she performed at her home, but it was not okay for her to be out in public. But by the end of her life, she died young as well as her brother.
Did she die after Felix?
She died 6 months before he did, and they both had strokes.
That's right.
People have said that it was almost like he died of heartbreak, you know, after.
So she died first.
She died in May, and then he died in November or something like that.
So Fanny Mendelssohn, did she help her brother with composition after he was successful, after she got married?
Well, yeah. I mean, what's really interesting about that is they did some things together. They published something because she technically wasn't allowed to publish.
For the same reasons.
Yeah, yeah. He did some songs and had them performed in England. He went to London and had them perform for Queen Victoria. Her favorite song was this song called Italienne. Felix had to reluctantly admit that it was Fanny's. So, you know, she got a little bit of recognition through the back door that way. But just about when she was going to publish, towards the end of her life, she had written some songs. She'd written some, I think, three-part songs for women. And she got a publisher, and she was about to have them published. And I think she died before they were published. But Felix, once the father died, Felix kind of took over that role. And he was very discouraging of her composing.
Felix was discouraging of
her publishing.
Of her publishing, not
yeah,
of,
not of
not
her
of
composing, but of, yeah, he said, you're too much a woman for that. You don't want to put yourself through the possibility of rejection. And you couldn't handle it.
That's terrible.
It's really astounding.
Oh, my God. Is there any works by Fanny Mendelssohn that you can recall playing?
I've played some of her songs. I played the piano part to several Lieder. And I've played some of the songs without words. And I played her first, she has a really big sonata that she wrote when she was 17. And I played that. She wrote a wonderful piano trio. I've not played that. I played the Clara Schumann piano trio. But Fanny wrote a equally good, maybe even better.
And I think they were friends, trio. Clara and Fanny.
I think Clara came to her salons, yeah.
So we want to talk more about the roles of women and how societal roles are getting in the way of their careers. Very sadly.
Very sadly.
And when did that ever change? I mean, when do
Has
we see?
It?
Well, obviously, at some turn of some century, maybe we started seeing women saying, I'm just going to go publish. I don't care what anybody says. Who do you think was one of the first women to say, I'm just going to publish because I want to?
Cécile Chaminade, I would say, in the late 19th century, she wrote over 400 compositions, and just about every single one of them was published during her lifetime.
Clara Schumann was a great pianist and composer, and she helped edit her husband's works.
Mm-hmm.
So what's fascinating is she was a little more famous than her husband, Robert, while they were alive, and that was hard on him because she was a touring concert pianist. Robert withstood the test of time, and he's the one we think of. What do you think of Clara's composing abilities?
I think that the pieces are really well crafted. I think they have really interesting harmonies. They're both lyrical and virtuosic. Some of them really sound like his music, and I wonder who influenced whom. There's one piece in particular that Schumann wrote, probably know the Davidsbündler Tanze. So the first movement is actually from a Clara Schumann mazurka that is from her Soirée Musicale. And he even says theme from Clara.
That seems fair. You know, yeah. They're married and their music is married. And I love that story about it, that it gets shared a little bit.
Right. And in one of his novelettes, he quotes music from one of her nocturnes that's part of the Soirée Musicale as well. So
do you think they influenced each other? They talked about their music.
When they got married, they spent a year or so studying Bach together.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, they were looking and copying Bach fugues and different pieces. They call it the year of song, first year they got married. You know, there's just a flowering of art songs from both of them.
You know, Schumann started off kind of small. I think it was Clara who encouraged him to start doing bigger works, orchestral works.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that Schumann wished that he could have done opera. I don't know.
He did write an opera. They just weren't very successful.
What's the biggest thing that Clara wrote?
She wrote a piano concerto when she was really young. Mm-hmm. Piano concerto in A minor. Roberts is in A minor as well.
As is the cello concerto.
Right, yeah. Right. Maybe the piano trio. You know, she didn't have access. When you're writing orchestral pieces, part of the thing is you have to have access to
musicians,
performing forces in order to have it done.
So
that's one of the reasons why so much music by women has been relegated to kind of like the, oh, it's not so important, you know, the triviality of salon music, or, you know, oh, it's just songs, or it's just little piano character pieces. They didn't have the training, first of all, that the men did. And then they didn't have access to those groups or the contacts with conductors to get the music played.
Or it's just the mindset, I can get these friends of mine to play these little art songs, but I don't think I can get a symphony orchestra to commit to playing my piano concerto.
Right, yeah.
So there's that whole stigma that they dealt with.
So the other thing is, Clara, she didn't have that much time to compose. Once they got married, you know, she had 8 pregnancies, and she was the major breadwinner.
Right. She was a very successful concert pianist.
Very successful concert pianist. You know, after she got married, you know, her father, he was her agent. You know, he was her taskmaster. He even wrote diary entries for her. I mean, it was really crazy. But then she had to take all that on her own. And so she would hire halls. She would arrange the transportation. She would arrange the ticket sales and play the programs. You know, she played one concert probably 7 or 8 months pregnant, which was unheard of in the 1840s.
And it's so liberating when you think of, I didn't know that Clara Schumann was so successful until I started reading up on her. And I know that the father didn't want them to get married, so they were secretly meeting for years.
And then they had a court, they had a 2-year court case.
Until they were allowed to get married. They got married, and I guess the dad got really mad until there were grandchildren. He just wanted to see the grandchildren,
yeah,
basically. Okay, so goes the life of the Schumanns.
There's a wonderful book, 2 wonderful books. There's a wonderful biography of Clara Schumann by Nancy Reich, who just passed away about 2 or 3 years ago. Wonderful musicologist. And then there's a historical novel called Longings. I think the author is R.D. Landon or Langdon. Something like that. It's a drama, you know, a historical sort of fictionalization of Robert and Clara's love life together.
Who is it? The cellist Stephen Isserlis. He has a little video on YouTube where he dresses up and he's Robert and he throws himself in the river.
And Sting, the musician Sting, did a dramatization of Robert and Clara.
It really
there's a DVD of him performing.
Okay.
Robert Schumann.
Well, I guess I got to find that to
put
it into the show notes, you know. So, yeah, the story of Robert and Clara really is very passionate. You know, they were so in love and they were sneaking around until they were allowed to get married. And he was just crazy about her. He would take a train for hours while she was on tour somewhere just so he could sit with her for 10 minutes in a coffee shop. It's just really compelling. And they were in love all the way. Robert came to a terrible end, but she survived him. And then did she do more with his works? Did she continue?
I don't think she composed anymore after
really?
He died. It's interesting. She dedicated herself to performing his music and promoting it and editing. And as you said before, she, you know, did major additions.
So where would he be without Clara? That's what you got to ask, you know?
You know, you wonder because... We could talk about Victoria Bond.
So Victoria Bond, she's got some Pittsburgh roots, and I see she's on your list. Did you record one of her work?
I did. I recorded a piece of hers called Sandberg Suite, which is just a four-minute piece. It's based on Carl Sandburg's poem Working Girls, and it's about girls, you know, rushing to work in Chicago in the 1920s. It takes sort of a folk-like theme and then subjects it to a few bluesy and Americana variations. Okay. That's a really accessible piece. That's a lot of fun.
And how did you first meet Victoria?
In 1982, we were in London for a trial. My husband was at a trial lawyers conference. At the same time, I scheduled a couple of concerts as well. Played in Wigmore Hall, and I played for the American Women's Club, and I was just doing an all-American program. No women at that point, but an all-American program. And I was off practicing. But then I was going to meet my husband at the Houses of Parliament for a tour. And I got there, and my husband had just met this lawyer. He said, you must meet Stephen Peskin's wife because she's a composer and a conductor. And that was Victoria Bond. And she had just finished her fellowship in Pittsburgh or a year or two before.
Right.
So I met her then. You know, we had dinner together. It was lovely. And then when I was looking for composers to work on in the 1990s, I came across her piece, Sandberg Suite, written about in one of those bibliographies. So,
and you started doing your focus on women composers in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I had always thought it was like part of your dissertation because you're Dr. Solomon. No, it's not.
My dissertation was actually Nikolai Lopotnikov, who has huge Pittsburgh connections because he taught at Carnegie Mellon, where we are right now.
You were living in Boston at the time?
I was living in Newcastle.
Really?
I was already at Slippery Rock when
I
was writing my dissertation.
Okay, so maybe that had some influence on who you picked.
Oh, it absolutely did, because I was going to be writing about Schubert. And my advisor in Boston said, if you're going to write about Schubert, I was going to write about the Wanderer Fantasy. He said, if you're going to write about Schubert, you're going to have to read everything that was ever written about him in every language. And you're going to have to study every large-scale fantasy that was ever written in the 19th. And he said, and you're going to be old and gray, and you're going to have to defer childbearing for the rest of your life. And I said, too late, I'm already 7 months pregnant. And so he said, find something that has a beginning and an end. And so I said, oh, can you suggest something? He goes, I won't suggest, because it's yours, but I'll comment. So I heard Jim Cunningham talk about Lopotnikov on WQED. So I said, Lopotnikov, he has Pittsburgh connections. I wondered if he wrote piano music. Went to the Carnegie Library, found out he wrote a ton of piano music. Nobody written about him. Nobody recorded any of the music. And so that was my dissertation and first recording.
That's a great story.
It was,
yeah, I love it. So it's got all kinds of Pittsburgh connections here. You got Jim Cunningham, you got CMU, and Victoria Bond thrown into the mix, you know.
Yeah, it's great.
This has been great, Nanette. I loved talking to you, and I've learned so much. So do come back again. We'll have some fun. Do it all over again.
I would love to.
Right now, you're listening to Nanette playing Victoria Bond's Sandberg Suite, which you can find at nanettekaplansolomon.com. Don't fret over the spelling, just go to our show notes for the link. Thanks for listening this week, and please do share this episode with a friend or someone you think will enjoy it. Hope you'll explore the musical compositions of women, and you can hear Nanette play performances in the Pittsburgh area in many places, including the Tuesday Musical Society that performs at Road of Shalom Temple in Shadyside. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.